All right, hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive.
It's great to be back.
Today, we're taking on a topic that I think we can all relate to. It's those pesky project assassins,
Bottlenecks.
Bottlenecks, exactly.
Yeah, you.
Whether you're leading a team, prepping for like a massive project launch, or just curious about, you know, the real world dramas behind the scenes, you know, these roadblocks, right?
Yeah.
They can make or break even the best laid plans.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're going beyond those like textbook scenarios and diving into some real life case studies from itgovernance.blog, where we're going to uncover some surprisingly simple yet effective solutions.
Yeah. What's interesting about these case studies is that they highlight a critical principle. The obvious problem is rarely the real bottleneck.
Ooh.
We're going to need to dig deeper, you know?
Right.
Peel back those layers and uncover those hidden snags that are truly causing those delays.
Well, I like that. Uncover the hidden snag. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's jump right into the first case study. Okay. Imagine a company. They're transitioning from that old school waterfall project management style to a more agile scrum approach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems straightforward, right?
Yeah, you think so, right?
Yeah. What could go wrong? But here's the plot twist. They hire an external development team. And get this, it's the same team that had already failed them on a previous project using the old waterfall method.
Oh, wow.
Talk about second chances, huh?
Yeah, that's brave.
This is where the drama unfolds.
This is where it gets good.
The developers start complaining that the client isn't providing enough subject matter experts, putting deadlines and budget at risk.
Oh, so classic.
Yeah. Now, you might think, classic blame game.
Right, exactly.
Right, but there's a twist.
There's always a twist.
I was ready to call foul on the developers, but an external project manager comes in to investigate.
Mm.
And they're kind of suspecting, you know, are they trying to inflate the budget? What's going on here?
Right.
Turns out their complaint was completely valid.
Oh, so the client's experts were initially present, but they found themselves with nothing to do because the developers weren't ready to actually collaborate with them.
Oh, so they're just in there twiddling their thumbs.
Exactly. And so these client experts who, you know, they still have their regular jobs to do.
Right. So they'd just be hanging out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Naturally, they reduce their on-site presence.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this backfired spectacularly because later on, all those misunderstandings and incomplete requirements, they all kind of like popped up and created these massive delays.
Oh, so it wasn't just a blame game. It was a communication breakdown.
Huge communication breakdown.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how did they untangle this mess? Was it some expensive software or a total team overhaul? What did they do?
Surprisingly, no. It was incredibly simple, actually. They used a shared calendar.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
You have
a calendar?
Just a shared calendar.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's all just too easy.
I know, right?
What was the real magic behind this fix? Because I'm a little skeptical, I gotta be honest.
You're right to be skeptical.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about having a calendar.
Really?
The beauty was threefold. First, it created visibility.
Okay.
Everyone knew who was needed, when, and for what. Second, it fostered accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides had to show up prepared, minimizing those like, oh, I thought you were handling that moment.
Oh, yeah, those are the worst.
And then finally, it forced alignment.
Okay.
By predefining topics, they ensured everyone was focusing on the same priorities.
So it wasn't the calendar itself, but the principles it enforced, I see.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. And this actually stuck.
Yeah.
They didn't need constant hand-holding or anything.
No. The system quickly became self-sustaining,
uh-huh.
Which I think really highlights the power of simple, well-designed processes.
Yeah.
Sometimes those small tweaks in communication and coordination can have a massive impact on a project's success.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, lesson one, don't underestimate the power of a shared calendar and the clarity it can bring to a chaotic project.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, case study number two. This one challenges a common assumption about project bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it features two projects.
Okay.
Both missing that crucial agreed upon requirements document, or as they say in the original German, the Flickenheft.
Yeah, I love that word.
I know. It's a good one.
Yeah.
And of course, both projects are hit with this barrage of new requests and changes.
Right.
Seemingly making completion impossible.
Classic.
Yeah. Now, the knee-jerk reaction is to blame the users. Right?
Yeah.
Of course. Oh, they're indecisive.
Yeah. They keep adding all these wants.
Or they're constantly adding all these nice-to-haves to the scope. Right.
Right.
But this case study suggests a different perspective.
A different lens.
So you're saying it's not always about wishy-washy users.
Not always.
But isn't that constant scope creep like the death of many projects?
It is, but the problem often stems from an immature product. Think of it this way. If the core functionality isn't solid and clearly understood, users are going to keep requesting changes because they're essentially trying to define what the product should be doing.
Oh, okay.
Once that core is stable, the requests naturally die down.
So how do you define mature? Like, is there a specific point where a product reaches that stage and everyone breathes a sigh of relief?
It's not like a magic switch or anything.
Okay.
It's an evolution. Think of it like building a house.
Okay.
You know, early on, you're figuring out the blueprint, making adjustments, you know, experimenting. Mm. You're not going to start decorating until the foundation is solid.
Right, right.
We've got to get that structure down first.
So in the early stages, those change requests are almost like inevitable, even welcome.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
They're part of the process of figuring out what works.
Exactly. It's valuable feedback, helping you refine and improve the product. But, and this is key, you need a system to manage those requests effectively.
Right.
If they're constantly derailing the project, that's a sign of a deeper problem.
Like that missing Flickton heft, that contract, basically.
Absolutely.
Between the development team and the users?
Yes.
I can see how that lack of clarity would just fuel the chaos.
Absolutely. And without that clear agreement, those change requests become more like desperate attempts to fix underlying problems that weren't addressed early on.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics. The first story, a project manager inherits a failing project.
Okay.
Saddled with a useless requirements document, essentially.
Right.
What'd they do? Scrap it and start over. What happened?
They did something much more clever, actually. They proposed a provisional acceptance.
A provisional acceptance?
What? Yeah, and so they forced the client to list everything, preventing a real sign-off.
Oh, okay.
So this became the new actionable to-do list, replacing that vague and outdated document.
So they kind of used the client's complaints to build a roadmap to success.
Yeah, exactly.
But wouldn't the client push back on this, though? It seems like a risky move.
It's a brilliant bit of psychology here, right?
Okay.
By framing it as provisional, the project manager acknowledged the client's concerns while also shifting the focus to solutions.
Okay.
So instead of arguing about what went wrong, they were now collaborating on how to fix it.
Right.
So it's a very subtle but important shift.
I like that. It's like a reframing of the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it turns the client into a partner in fixing the mess.
Now, the second story also features a failing project, but this time it's a communication breakdown.
Yes.
Between the developers and the users. Tell me more about that.
So in this case, the developers thought they had clear requirements, but the users vehemently disagreed.
Oh, boy.
And guess what? Those dreaded change requests were actually attempts to define what was never properly documented in the first place.
So it wasn't scope creep.
It wasn't.
It was trying to pin down what the project was supposed to be.
It was fundamental, yeah.
Wow. So did they manage to salvage this one? Or was it a complete disaster?
They did, but it required a difficult decision.
Oh, no.
They enforce a new requirements analysis phase, even though there was initial resistance.
Oh, I bet.
But crucially, they facilitated direct communication between the developers and the users, cutting out a bureaucratic middle layer.
Oh, interesting.
That was actually hindering progress.
So sometimes less is more.
Exactly.
That's a great example of how sometimes you have to take a step back.
Yes.
To move forward.
Absolutely.
But what about the Flickton heft in this case?
Yeah, good question.
Was it salvageable?
No, they ended up creating a brand new one.
Okay.
But this time it was a collaborative effort.
Oh.
By bringing the developers and users together, they finally established a shared understanding of what the product needed to be.
Makes sense. All right. So on to our final case study, which takes us to the upper echelons of decision making. This is...
Oh, boy.
The dreaded steering committee...
The dreaded steering committee.
Yeah.
I think we've all been in meetings where things just grind to a halt, waiting for approvals, waiting for a decision.
Oh, it's the worst.
The worst.
So in this case, we have an organization with multiple projects under an organizational development program.
Yeah.
And they all require approval from this high-level committee. So the bottleneck is the committee itself.
Yes, right.
Were they just incompetent or deliberately slowing things down? What was the deal?
Not at all.
Okay.
The committee members were very skilled, very knowledgeable,
okay.
but they were simply overloaded. They just didn't have the time to make all the decisions needed
right.
to keep things moving.
I see.
And to add fuel to the fire, there was high turnover in project leadership on a key project.
Oh, so even more chaos.
More chaos.
And I bet executive leadership wanted tight control over everything, making delegation a non-starter right now.
You read my mind.
Yeah, I've been there.
So they were really stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Okay.
They needed a solution that addressed the immediate bottleneck.
Okay.
The committee's limited capacity.
Right.
But also anticipated future problems like project instability.
So how did they do it? Did they find a way to clone those committee members?
No clones.
Okay.
But they implemented a multi-layered approach that was pretty ingenious.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this multi-layered solution.
All right.
And how it actually worked in practice.
Okay.
Walk me through how they built this support system. What were the key layers?
First, they established a mentor system.
Okay.
Two committee members were assigned as mentors to each project,
providing
early review and problem-solving support before those big formal committee meetings.
Ah, so it's like a mini steering committee for each project, right?
Exactly.
Guiding them through those early hurdles
right.
and making sure they're like well-prepared for those big presentations.
Exactly. And those mentors could also flag potential problems or areas of disagreement early on. Preventing those last-minute surprises that often derail meetings.
Oh, I've been in those meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Not fun. But committees are notorious for information overload.
Oh, for sure.
How did they handle the paperwork and the reporting side of things?
They streamlined that as well.
Okay.
They introduced standardized reports, ensuring a consistent flow of information.
Okay.
And allowing for pre-meeting alignment.
So no more sifting through mountains of mismatched documents.
Exactly.
Everybody's working from the same playbook.
Yes. And that helps the committee members get on the same page before those marathon discussions.
Right. So they can actually focus on those key decisions.
Right.
But I'm guessing they needed more than just paperwork solutions to keep those projects on track, especially with that leadership turnover you mentioned.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Streamlining the process was crucial, but they also needed hands-on support. For those struggling project teams.
Right.
And that's where they brought in a program management office expert.
Okay. For those of us who aren't, you know, project management gurus, what exactly is a program management office and how did this expert help?
So a program management office, or PMO, is like a central hub for project management expertise and support.
Okay.
They help standardize processes, manage resources, and provide guidance to project teams.
Oh.
In this case, the PMO expert provided direct support to those struggling teams, especially the one dealing with leadership turnover, ensuring continuity and expertise.
That's a brilliant example of proactive problem solving.
I think so.
They anticipated a potential issue and had a solution ready to go.
Absolutely.
So this multi-layered approach was designed to address both the immediate bottleneck, the committee's capacity, and potential future problems.
It addressed both.
Did it actually work?
It was a resounding success.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, projects moved forward more smoothly.
Uh-huh.
The committee wasn't bogged down in endless details.
Yeah.
And they were able to anticipate and address potential problems before they blew up.
So it was a win-win.
Win-win.
Efficient decision making and less stress for everybody.
Exactly.
This case study highlights how bottlenecks can reside in processes, not just individuals.
Very true.
And sometimes you need those layered solutions to address those complex problems effectively.
Absolutely. And it really reinforces the point that project management isn't just about tasks and timelines.
Right.
It's also about people, communication, and creating systems that support success.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground here with these three very different case studies.
We have.
What are your, like, your initial thoughts?
Yeah.
Anything that particularly stood out to you?
I'm struck by how each case, in its own way, reinforces the importance of identifying the real bottleneck.
Okay.
It's so easy to get caught up in those, like, surface-level symptoms.
Yeah.
Complaints about resources, endless change requests, overloaded committees.
Right.
But those are often just the tip of the iceberg, you know?
It's like detective work, right? You've got to look beyond those obvious clues to uncover the true culprit.
Yes.
Behind those project delays.
Precisely. And once you've identified the root cause, you can start exploring those creative solutions, right?
Okay.
Remember that simple shared calendar?
Yeah.
The reframed provisional acceptance, the multi-layered approach to committee decision-making.
Right.
These weren't complex, expensive fixes,
right,
but they were targeted and highly effective.
Yeah, I think that's a really empowering message for our listeners.
I agree.
Project challenges can feel so daunting.
Yeah.
But these case studies really show that often those solutions are within reach.
Absolutely. It's a matter of shifting your mindset from like reactive firefighting
right.
to proactive problem solving.
I love that idea of proactive problem solving.
Mm.
But it's easier said than done.
It is.
Right? How do you actually cultivate that mindset in yourself and your team?
It starts with awareness. Pay attention to those recurring patterns, those frustrations that keep popping up, you know?
Yeah.
Are there certain tasks or processes that always seem to cause delays?
Okay.
Are there specific individuals who are consistently overloaded?
So don't just accept those frustrations as part of the job.
No.
Dig deeper.
Ask, why is this happening?
Yeah.
And how can we prevent it from happening again?
I like that. That's good.
Okay.
And once you start asking those questions,
yeah,
I imagine you'd be amazed at the creative solutions that emerge.
You would, and it's not always about grand sweeping changes.
Right.
Sometimes those small targeted tweaks,
yeah,
like that shared calendar, can have a massive ripple effect.
Absolutely. And that ties back to what you were saying earlier about the importance of a mature product.
Yes.
Can you unpack that a bit more?
Yeah.
I think that concept could use some further exploration.
Of course. So think of it this way. In the early stages of a project,
okay,
you're essentially building the foundation, right?
Yeah.
The core functionality is still being defined.
There's a lot of experimentation and iteration going on.
So like building a house, you're not going to start painting the walls while you're still figuring out where the rooms are going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And during this phase,
okay,
those change requests,
right,
while potentially frustrating, can be incredibly valuable.
Correct.
They're helping you refine and clarify the product's purpose and capabilities.
So rather than seeing them as attacks, we should view them as opportunities to improve.
True. Exactly.
But how do you know when a product is mature? Like, is there a clear signal or something?
It's not an overnight transformation.
Okay.
It's an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
As the project progresses,
yeah,
that core functionality becomes more solid,
okay,
more stable.
Right.
Users have a clearer understanding of what the product can do.
And at that point, the change requests should start to taper off, right?
Exactly.
Because the fundamental purpose and
yeah,
functionality of the product is no longer in flux. Precisely. Of course, there will always be some level of change and adaptation.
Sure.
But those frantic, like, we need to change everything type of requests should become less frequent.
So it's not about preventing change altogether, but rather like understanding when change is most likely to occur.
Yes.
And why.
Exactly.
And it's about recognizing that sometimes those seemingly annoying change requests are actually valuable feedback.
Yeah.
Helping you to further refine and improve the product.
Absolutely.
It's almost like those users are your unofficial beta testers, right?
You could say that.
Yeah.
But here's the key.
Right.
You need a system in place to manage those change requests effectively.
Okay.
If they're constantly derailing the project, throwing everything off track,
yeah,
that's a sign of a deeper problem.
It all goes back to that detective work we were talking about, right?
It does.
You need to determine if those change requests were part of the natural evolution of the product.
Right.
Or if they're a symptom of, like, a poorly defined scope or misaligned expectation. And that's where having that clear, agreed upon requirements document,
yes,
or Flickenheft becomes absolutely essential.
Yes.
It's like having a contract basically between the development team and the users, clearly outlining what the product will and will not do.
Precisely. And it needs to be a living document.
Okay.
Something that can be updated and refined as the project progresses and the understanding of the product evolves.
Makes sense.
Oh.
Okay, so even with the best requirements document in place,
mm-hmm,
we're still going to encounter bottlenecks. Right.
Of course.
Especially when you're juggling multiple projects, like in that last case study.
Right.
How do you stay ahead of those multi-project bottlenecks?
Yeah.
What are some tips or tricks?
That's where proactive problem solving becomes even more critical.
Okay.
It's about anticipating those potential bottlenecks,
yeah,
like the committee's limited capacity, and putting systems in place to mitigate their impact.
So you're essentially building those safety nets
Yes.
before you need them.
Precise.
That's smart.
Hmm?
Okay, so what were the key takeaways
Yeah.
from that last case study?
Mm-hmm.
What can our listeners learn from that organization's experience?
Well, first, it highlighted the importance of those layered solutions.
Okay.
Complex problems rarely have simple one-size-fits-all answers.
Right.
You need to approach them from multiple angles, addressing the various facets of the issue.
It's like those Russian nesting dolls, right?
Yes.
You open one to reveal another and so on.
Exactly.
Each layer addressing a specific part of the problem.
And in this case, they had the mentor system
okay.
to provide that early support to project teams,
right?
Those standardized reports to streamline information flow, and that PMO expert to offer that specialized guidance and keep things running smoothly.
They essentially built a support system
yeah.
to catch any potential problems before they could derail the entire program.
Precisely. And it worked because they were addressing both the immediate bottleneck, the committee's limited capacity, and the potential for future bottlenecks like project instability due to leadership changes.
So they were thinking ahead,
yes,
playing a strategic game of project chess.
Exactly.
And they were doing it in a way that balanced executive control with efficient decision making.
That's right.
Not an easy feat.
Not at all.
But they found a way to empower the project teams.
Yes.
Without completely relinquishing oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads to another kind of crucial point.
Okay.
Sometimes the bottleneck isn't a process or a system, but a person.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about those personnel bottlenecks.
Okay.
We've all encountered them, right?
Oh, yeah.
The manager who's reluctant to delegate.
Yes.
The team member who's chronically behind schedule.
Mm.
The client who just can't make a decision.
It's the worst.
How do you deal with those situations? What's your advice?
It's tricky, and it requires like a delicate touch.
Okay.
Sometimes the solution is as simple as having a direct, honest conversation with the person, explain the impact of their actions, and work together to find a solution.
So open communication is key.
Always.
As always.
Always.
But what if that doesn't work? What if they're just like unwilling or unable to change?
Then you might need to consider more drastic measures, unfortunately.
Okay, like what?
Reassigning them to a different role or even removing them from the project entirely.
Oh, wow.
It's a tough call, but sometimes it's necessary
yeah.
for the good of the project.
It's like that old saying, sometimes you have to cut off a limb to save the body.
Exactly.
But how do you make those difficult decisions without creating resentment or damaging relationships?
It's about approaching those situations with empathy and understanding.
Okay.
Remember, there's usually a reason why someone is behaving the way they are.
Okay.
They might be feeling overwhelmed, insecure, or they might lack the necessary skills or experience.
So it's not about labeling them as the problem,
no,
but rather understanding the root cause of their behavior. And finding a solution that benefits both the individual and the project.
Yes.
That's a leadership challenge for sure.
It is.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground today, deep divers.
Oh, we have.
We've talked about the importance of identifying those real bottlenecks, the role of product maturity, the need for layered solutions, and the challenges of those personnel bottlenecks.
Those are tricky.
It's been a roller coaster of project management insights.
It has.
So what are some final thoughts? What are some key takeaways for our listeners that they can apply to their own work?
I think the big aha moment I want them to walk away with is that bottlenecks are inevitable. They're part of the project landscape. It's like those pesky weeds in your garden, you know?
Okay.
You can pull them out, but they'll always find a way to grow back.
So embrace those bottlenecks.
Exactly.
See them as a sign that your project's alive and kicking.
Yes.
Don't get discouraged when you encounter them, right? Yeah. Instead, embrace the challenge and use it as an opportunity to improve your processes.
Because every bottleneck, when approached thoughtfully, can teach you something valuable about how work really gets done.
I love that perspective shift.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fear the bottleneck. Learn from it.
Rest.
But how do we start applying those lessons?
Yeah.
What's that first step?
Awareness.
Okay.
When you encounter a bottleneck, don't jump to conclusions.
Okay.
Take a step back, gather information, and analyze the situation carefully.
So channel your inner project detective.
Exactly.
Don't just treat the symptoms. Find the root cause.
Absolutely.
And once you've identified the real culprit, what then? What do we do?
Then it's time to brainstorm solutions.
Okay.
Don't limit yourself to the obvious or the conventional.
Think outside the box.
Yes.
Experiment. be creative.
Exactly.
Right. And remember, sometimes the simplest solutions are the most effective.
They often are.
Like that shared calendar, that reframed provisional acceptance.
Right. That mentor system.
Yeah.
Simple yet brilliant.
Yes.
But what if we're stuck? What if we just can't find that aha solution?
Don't be afraid to seek help.
Okay.
Whether it's a program management office expert, a mentor, or simply a colleague with a fresh perspective, there are resources available to support you.
Okay.
Tap into those networks.
Yeah.
And don't try to go it alone.
Build your project support squad.
Absolutely.
And remember, every project, every bottleneck, it's a learning opportunity.
It is.
Project management is a continuous learning process.
It is.
Embrace those challenges, deep divers, and use them to hone your skills.
Yes.
Refine your processes and become a true bottleneck busting ninja.
That's the goal.
Okay. Before we wrap up this deep dive,
yeah,
I want to leave our listeners with a challenge.
Okay.
Something to ponder as they navigate their own projects and work.
Sure.
And it kind of builds on what we've discussed today, those common threads that run through all three of those real world case studies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So think about the projects you're involved in, or even just the way work gets done in your organization.
Right.
What are those potential bottlenecks lurking beneath the surface?
Where do things tend to get stuck?
Yeah.
Are there recurring complaints about resources?
Okay.
Or a sense that certain teams are always overloaded?
Mm-hmm.
Are projects constantly plagued by that dreaded scope creep?
Right.
Yeah.
Do decisions seem to get stuck in endless loops of approval?
Exactly.
These could be signs of deeper bottlenecks that need to be addressed.
Absolutely.
And remember, identifying the real bottleneck, that's just the first step.
Right.
The next step is finding those creative solutions.
And this is where it gets exciting.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to experiment, to try something new.
Right.
Even if it seems too simple or unconventional.
Yeah.
Try that shared calendar, even if it feels almost childish.
Boy.
Challenge those assumptions about scope creep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just assume users are being difficult. Dig deep, understand their real needs.
Yeah.
Look for ways to streamline those decision-making processes.
Okay.
Even if it means pushing back against those established norms.
The key is to be proactive.
Yes.
Anticipate those potential bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
Have solutions ready to go.
And never underestimate the power of communication.
Open, honest communication is essential for identifying those bottlenecks.
Yes.
Brainstorming those creative solutions, building that culture of collaboration.
Absolutely.
And problem solving.
Yes.
It's like the glue that holds it all together.
It is.
So, deep divers, as you navigate the world of projects and work,
yeah,
keep these principles in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Be observant.
Yes.
Be proactive.
Be proactive.
And above all, be communicative.
Be communicative. And who knows, you might just find yourself turning those dreaded bottlenecks into opportunities for growth and innovation.
That's the goal.
And hey, if you've got any amazing bottleneck busting stories or insights of your own.
Oh, we'd love to hear them. Share them with us on social media.
Yeah.
We're always eager to learn from our fellow deep divers.
For sure.
Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged.
Stay proactive.
And keep on diving.
Keep diving.
So to wrap up this deep dive into project bottlenecks, I have one final thought for you. It's easy to look at these case studies and think, well, those are big companies with complex projects. My work is different.
But that's where the real power of these insights lies, you know?
Yeah.
They're applicable at any scale.
Okay.
Whether you're planning a family vacation,
right,
launching a side hustle, or leading a team at a Fortune 500 company, the principles are the same.
So you're saying even small projects have bottlenecks?
Absolutely.
Like planning that family vacation, what could possibly go wrong there?
Oh, let me tell you, I've witnessed some epic family vacation bottlenecks.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Think about it. You've got multiple stakeholders,
right,
each with their own opinions,
yeah,
and priorities.
Dad wants to go fishing. Mom wants to visit museums. The kids just want to hit the pool.
Exactly. And then you've got resource constraints, budget, time off work, the availability of that perfect Airbnb. And let's not forget the dreaded scope creep.
Oh, while we're in Paris, we should totally take a day trip to Disneyland.
See? Even a seemingly simple vacation can quickly become a tangled web of competing priorities and potential bottlenecks.
Okay, I'm starting to see your point.
Yeah.
But how do you apply these, like, big picture project management ideas to something like a family vacation?
It starts with that same awareness we've been talking about, right? What are the potential points of friction? Where are things likely to get stuck?
So before you even start booking flights, you need to identify those potential bottlenecks.
Exactly. And then you can brainstorm solutions. Maybe it's creating a shared budget spreadsheet so everyone's on the same page financially.
Okay.
Or setting clear decision-making processes to avoid those endless debates about where to eat dinner.
Or maybe it's just accepting that you can't please everyone all the time, right?
Absolutely.
And being willing to compromise.
Exactly. And remember, even with the best planning, there will be unexpected challenges.
Yeah, that's life.
The key is to be flexible, adaptable, and approach those bumps in the road with a sense of humor. Because let's face it, even the most perfectly planned vacation is going to have its share of hiccups.
So it's not about avoiding bottlenecks altogether. It's about navigating them effectively.
Precisely. And that's a skill that's valuable in every aspect of our lives, from our personal projects to our professional endeavors.
That's a great point. So deep divers, as you go forth and tackle those projects, big and small, remember those key lessons we've uncovered today. Identify those real bottlenecks, embrace creativity, be proactive, communicate openly, and don't be afraid to seek help when you need it.
And above all, remember that bottlenecks, while potentially frustrating, can also be incredible opportunities for learning and growth.
It's all about shifting our perspective, isn't it?
It is.
Instead of seeing those bottlenecks as roadblocks, we can view them as challenges to overcome, puzzles to solve.
Exactly, because at the end of the day, it's not about achieving perfect bottleneck-free projects,
right,
but about navigating those inevitable challenges with grace, resilience, and maybe even a little bit of humor.
That's a great note to end on. So until next time, deep divers, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep pushing those boundaries.
We'll see you next time.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.